Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with another edition of the Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. It is February 24th here in cold, chilly Columbus, Ohio, where Atlanta United was beaten 1-0 at Lower.com Field in the opening match of the MLS season. Highlights, there weren't a lot, to be honest with you. Lowlights, there were a couple. But you got to remember, Atlanta United was playing the MLS champs, playing them at their home, where they've lost once since like August of 2022. Cold weather, new faces in the lineup. It, you know, all things considered, losing 1-0, not the end of the world. There are some concerns that I have that I will share with you. But in this podcast, you're going to hear from manager Gonzalo Pineda, Brad Guzan, Derek Williams. I'm going to answer your questions. I'm going to tell you how you can subscribe to the AJC for a very low, low rate. I hope you'll listen. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC, on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. And I want to thank everyone ahead of time for their outstanding questions following today's loss. If this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. I'm so out of it. They could put whatever they wanted to in that promo regarding podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Potterly Poop, Potteraga Ding Dong, and I would read it and have no idea if it's actually a thing or not. But anyway, let's get into the game. Let's go through some of the stats first. The obviously big stat, 1-0 loss for Atlanta United. Columbus had 16 shots to Atlanta United 6. Atlanta put just 4. I don't know if they even put 4 on goal. Atlanta United only created 4 chances. Now, the second half was much better than the first half. Columbus had like 12 shots in the first half, 2 on goal with a 1 goal to Atlanta United's 1. And 1 and none. So you could take some solace in that. But there's some issues. We're going to get into the issues in the mailbag. Let's start off with the sound. Talking to Gonzalo Pineda on what went wrong in the first half that was better in the second half.
I think the pressing moments were very good. We were pressing actually pretty well, Columbus. But after we gained the ball, we were not connecting the passes. We were lacking a little bit of either connect forward or just secure the possession for a bit longer. But very often we disrupt their build-up very well. For example, the one the goalkeeper gives to Bartek in the first half, and then he immediately tries to shoot. But maybe if he has a bit more composure, controls the ball, and maybe he still attempts the shot. But if not, we can start our possession sequences. I think in the second half, once we start to do that and to secure the ball and to have some sort of possession, activate the wingers faster, we start to be a bit more dangerous. And then suddenly we start to have the control of the game. So I think that was one main emphasis, trying to get more of the hold of the game.
Now, many of you know, Atlanta United was beaten twice by Columbus in the playoffs last year in the best of three series, both times at Lower.com Field. Atlanta only won 3 of its 17 league road games last year. A lot of emphasis in this preseason was getting better on the road. First home game, or first road game, they lose. I was curious from Pineda if the focus was better today on the road than in the previous matches.
I see the team is more focused. I think today we did a very good job, especially the second half, I was very happy with the response of the players. It's not easy to play the champion, the first team of the season, and they did a great job. I think they adjust very well. I like what I see in the locker room, the belief that they have in themselves. And we lost today. We cannot change that, but I think especially the second half performance is encouraging. We can build something out of that, and I see a better mentality already, and we have to come back to the next game.
Now, if you've read my story, you read the lead to the story, you'll see that I thought that Atlanta United, a few players fell asleep on Columbus's goal. If you watch the goal back, you'll see it started with a switch from right to left. Brooks Lennon came out to guard the wing, forcing Sabalochenitze to come back and try to guard the forward. He didn't get there in time. Rossi put a cross in. Gregerson could see both things developing. He's one of the new faces, along with Derek Williams and Bartók Slajs. Didn't get to either one. Ball comes all the way through to Cucho Hernandez, who's unmarked on the back post. So to me, there were at least four to five players who made errors on that play. So I wanted to hear from Pineda on what led to that goal.
I think there were moments where we needed the fullbacks to be more aggressive on their wingbacks, and there were some other moments where maybe we need to wait and delay the pressure because there is a threat of the on their lap, and that's what happened in that play. I think Brooks went too earlier into that play outside to Yeboah, and then Rossi run in the channel, and then Saba from the winger position had to follow that far, and that's how they got into that goal. But again, it was a rebound. It was, you know, hard to take account of the ball in that part. So I think, it was a great strike also by Cucho. But I think they, if you look at the way we defend those crosses and the shots and how many shots we block, I think we did better. In general, we looked more solid defensively. But in that specific action, I think there were a couple of things that we can fix.
Brad Guzan was next to talk to us, and I wanted to know his opinion on the difference between the first half, when Atlanta United had to hold on for dear life to get into the locker room down 1-0, and the second half, when it had two really good chances to score. Should point out, Columbus had a penalty kick saved by Guzan. It was a weird situation. It started with Atlanta United going down the field, Yakimaki's putting a shot just wide. I think it was on the ensuing goal kick or a throw-in a few seconds later. The Columbus player hit a pass over the top that went over all three Atlanta United lines to Mo Farris. And he got brought down in the box. The flag went up from the assistant referee. I thought the guy was offside. As it turns out, we found out after the game, the assistant referee had raised his flag for a foul, not the offside. That's what confused everybody. Farris was down. That delayed things. And by the time all that got done, then the referee was able to go look at the video review, saw Gregerson committed a foul. Pineda thought it was soft. Cucho stepped up to try to get his brace, was denied by Guzan. Here's Guzan talking about that.
I think for sure we took care of the ball better. I think we were loose with the ball in the first half. We weren't able to connect the second or third ball going forward, and allowed them to create more and more pressure. But in the second half, I thought we did a much better job with that.
And here's Guzan describing the things that went wrong on Columbus's goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got him on the left-hand side of the field. Probably don't get close enough to affect the ball there. They hit the diagonal. They switch to the other side. We're probably a little bit late getting out in terms of a 2v1 situation. I think he slots the inside run. He slots the ball down the channel. They've got, I think, two guys in the box, potentially three. I've not seen it back yet. Right. And so at that moment, I think we've got our two center backs and Caleb. Obviously, Cucho ends up coming up on the far side. Try to make a play on it, knowing that the two runners are in the center of the box and can certainly, they can make a play on it. It's a bit of a bang-bang play. And, at that moment then, Cucho is on the backside.
And I was curious, as I was with Pineda, to know if Brad thought that this was just a lapse of concentration.
Well, I think it's, you know, you can go back to when we have it. We've got him on our left side of the field. And, you know, you talk about, you know, potentially one mistake not leading to two mistakes, to three mistakes, to four mistakes. And, you know, we've got him on that side of the field. And at that moment, we've got to keep him there and not let him out of pressure. And whether it's make a tackle, whether it's block a run, whether it's denied the ability in the space to switch the ball, because once they switch it, now we're scrambling because we're outnumbered on the other side of the field, right? And we're trying to create an advantage on one side, and when we don't get close enough and they switch the ball to the other side, now they've got the advantage of the 2v1.
And then here's Brad talking about the positive of the team's fight in the second half.
At halftime, we knew we needed to keep going. We needed to be better on the ball. We were in the second half. You know, they're obviously they're a good team, but we had enough opportunities to get something from the game, and I think when you look back on it, that's the disappointment is there because we had the opportunity to get something from the game, whether it's a point or, you know, potentially you go on to win the game or whatnot. You know, a loss certainly leaves a bitter taste in your mouth after the performance in the second half.
Derek Williams was next up, spoke to me for a bit. As with Guzan, I was curious about his opinions on the difference between the first and the second half.
First half, we found it tough. They're a very good team. They were riding high. They just got their rings. Momentum, the crowd was loud. I think they were kind of riding that wave a bit, and it took us a while to get used to playing that door formation. They're a good team. They're front three. They know when to drop off and bring you into places you don't want to go. And first half an hour, it took us a while to get used to it. After that, I thought we did well. Second half, I thought we were the better team. We had our chances. And look, a lot of teams are going to come here and get, I think they're going to get four or five put past them. So defensively, I thought we did pretty well. But we're still building. Look, that team there that we just played, they've been playing together for a whole year. And you can tell we had a few new players, including myself, are still getting used to each other. But I think there's a lot of positives because we come here. I thought we should have got something out of the game, at least a point. And I thought second half we really put in the fire. Looking around on the field and you see players really want it, and that's always a positive thing. And the guys were gutted after the game, which is understandable. So yeah, it's all in all, didn't get the result we wanted. There's some positives to take.
Here's Williams on the positives and negatives from the match.
Positives, coming to Columbus, putting on a performance like we did in the second half. We could have scored two good chances. Another positive, playing together, another 11, 90 minutes of playing alongside each other, still figuring out each other's, how we play. That was first game playing with Thiago.
Yeah.
And we're just learning. I'm just trying to get him the ball as much as I can. So every time I see him free, I'm trying to give him the ball because, you know, he can unlock and just do some crazy things. So, yeah, look, the fight was there. That was another positive to see. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to the next game. A bit of a shame that we don't have a game next week because you really want to kind of put that result behind you and kick on and play again. But, look, we have another week and a half to go and just on the training field to get better.
Now, this was the first time in an MLS match that Derek has played with Stian Gregerson. I'm just going to go with Gregerson. I had it and then I lost it. I'm horrible with names. This was the fourth time overall. I think they played together three times in the preseason. So I was curious about the partnership.
He put out a great shift today. And yeah, our relationship together is just building. He's a good player. He's very quick. And yeah, like I said, we're just learning from each other and learning how high to be as a back four, how could we can, it's a risk sometimes, but we're still figuring things out.
And then also for Bartok here, they form the triangle in front of Guzan. Obviously, they replaced Luis Abram, Miles Robinson, and Mateus Uzetu, who were part of that triangle in last year's playoffs.
Yeah, I think it was okay. First half, like I said, it was tough. That goal was a bit of a kick in the teeth, but look, before I've seen Columbus, once they scored, they put three or four in and a half, so it was a positive to go into the half, not conceding again. And second half, I thought we really dominated. That we were the only team that looked like we were going to score. Obviously, they had the penalty, but other than that, they didn't have any chances. So, just looking forward to the next game.
And then I wanted to follow up with Derek on something that he talked about with Columbus dragging defenders into places they don't want to go. I was curious about how tough it is to stay disciplined when they know that's what Columbus is trying to do. He gave a really interesting answer.
It's tough because if I don't step out, I need my midfielder to really shift across. But he has also his man. So it's just about a balance and knowing where the danger is. So second half, I kind of just said, right, I'll stay in my slot and let them try break us down more instead of giving them that space in behind. I think that worked a lot better. Like I said, they're a very good team. They have a very good manager. They've been playing together for over a year and a half or so, and they're really drilled in. And the positive, I'm excited to just play with this team again and just get on the training ground and really work on everything.
All right, this is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
And we're back. We're excited to announce a great deal for a greater Atlanta. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the AJC for just $1.99 per week for life. As long as you keep your subscription, you have access to the substance and soul of the South, including breaking news and in-depth investigations, food, sports, business, and more from AJC.com every day for the rest of your life. Subscribe now by going to AJC.com/start. That's AJC.com/start to take advantage of the South's biggest deal. This is for new subscribers only. If you're out and about, you listen in the car, you listen while you're on a walk, you listen while you're jogging. This is also included at the bottom of every story I write. AJC.com/start. Let's dip into the mailbag. Nick, friend of the podcast, says, I hope you're enjoying your trip to Columbus. I'm not going to overreact too much to losing by one goal on the road to the reigning champs, he says, since we won't have many games that are as difficult as this. I'm curious about your thoughts on Bartok, Gregerson, and Williams. How do they look in person? I thought for the most part they look good. It's tough in a first half like that when, you know, after like the first 10 minutes, Columbus really took control. Atlanta kept trying to pin Columbus against the sidelines. And at first it kind of worked. And then Columbus just used a couple of simple moves on either side in triangles to break that and switch the ball. So in that regard, Gregerson and Williams didn't have a lot to do. Neither did Bartok. If you watch the first half again, there are long periods of play where Bartok had nobody to defend because Columbus wasn't putting anyone in those spaces. They were dropping in and moving around and almost using like false tens to try to create seams. So I'm curious to see how the three are going to look against New England, which is going to play a more traditional formation, more traditional tactics than did Columbus. But I think there's a lot of promise. You could see Gregerson's speed. You could see Bartok's calmness on the ball. Williams, Pineda talked about how good he was at keeping the back line organized, how communicative he was. So there's potential. We've just got to see what happens. On to Adam, who says, given the setting, I'm content with the result in the last 30 minutes. But a lot of that also is down to the crew being profligate in front of goal. Good use of profligate. He says it could have been 4-0. Yeah, you're right. So the offense for me for Atlanta United, so Yakimakis had a really good chance at the end of the game. It hit the goalkeeper's hand as he was coming out. Almada had a good chance at the end. It deflected off of a Columbus player. Yakimakis had a good chance at the beginning of the second half. But those were really it. They just, it was very static, I thought, on offense. And there's a question about that coming up. Just not a lot of off-the-ball movement. Adam continues, regarding the Stripes' defensive marking and periods of lethargic play, two things that they just can't seem to let go. How much of that is on Pineda? Well, it's not like Pineda wants them to play that way. It's the first game. Everybody's getting used to each other. It's cold as whatever the coldest thing you can think of today. Let's see what happens in the next couple of games. He says, the announcers offered the woeful stat about Atlanta's record on grass. I don't know what Atlanta's record on grass is. I'll have to look it up. Any idea how that compares with other turf teams? No idea, but it's an interesting question. Because I know Atlanta routinely practices on grass. 99% of the time they practice on grass. Only when the weather is god-awful do they go to Mercedes-Benz. The rest of the time they practice on grass. He says, thanks for the coverage, and here's to hoping to another fun and strong year for footy in Atlanta. Well, thank you, Adam. On to Rob, another friend of the podcast, who says, tough loss today. My question is one I imagine you'll get a lot, but hopefully I can ask it in a way that's a bit more level-headed. That's what I always appreciate you, Rob. Your level-headedness. Your level-headedity. What's a reasonable timeline to see new contract-worthy results from Pineda and his staff this season? On the one hand, a 1-0 loss on the road to the defending champs, especially as well as we adjusted at halftime, seems promising. On the other, starting off another season with the same old problems that have plagued Pineda's tenure, mental lapses defensively, unforced errors, and poor starts, to name a few, was disheartening. How long should we give this roster and staff to show this year will be different before we bring out the pitchforks and hashtags? Well, some people already have, which is a little bit silly. It's not like you lost to Toronto. It's not like you lost to Chicago. It's not like you lost to Colorado or Austin, some of the worst teams in Major League Soccer. You lost to the defending champs. You lost 1-0. It could have been, you know, it could have been Columbus 3-0. It could have been Atlanta United 3-1. It could have been 2-2. Columbus dominated the first half. Atlanta, I won't say dominate, but I thought played much better than Columbus in the second half. Just be patient. Give it some time. It's a tough stretch to the beginning of the season. If you get some points out of this, it's going to go a long way for the rest of the year. Greg says, the team seems well built for a lot of the opponents we'll face, where we dominate possession and our attack-minded fullbacks can get forward and wide. But we really seem to struggle against Nancy's system. Most teams do. The wide spaces were open a lot, and Saba in particular doesn't seem very adept or inclined at tracking back. I'm almost reminded of the 2018 season when Tata took a more pragmatic approach to the playoffs with a 3-5-2. Do you think this is a look Pineda should consider against the crew, offering a little more defensive width and then trying to hit them in transition? I love the 3-5-2. If you subscribe to the podcast, you know I've talked about this formation many, many, many times. The problem with 3-5-2 now is if you run it, one of your really good players is not going to be able to be on the field. You are out of bodies because you're giving up a midfielder to add a center back. If you want to run it against Columbus, you can. It's odd to try to run one formation for one specific opponent. But I would love to see Atlanta adopt this in the middle of games if things are getting tough. Just make the switch, get through the storm, get to halftime, get to the end of the game, whatever it is, and move on. On to Ben, friend of the podcast. I hope you're thought out and time to do the podcast. I am. The team and Pineda made a big deal about the preseason being on the road this year to prepare them to be more competitive on the road. How is this preseason any different than the past two when the team spent the majority of it in Mexico? You know, Ben, I have thought about that and I have wanted to ask that. And then every time I remember, I then forget because I'm asking other things. But yeah, this preseason really wasn't any different than, frankly, a lot of Atlanta United preseasons. Most of them have been spent on the road. Going back to 2017 with Charleston and IMG, and it's, you know, I think it was just a convenient theme. Says, as of today, it was much of the same inspiring on the road. Drink some coffee and get warm. Well, I'm going to drink something and it ain't going to be coffee. Jamie says, why does United seem to play with a lack of urgency on the road? Once they got in the game in the second half, they were dangerous, but they didn't seem to have a plan in the first half. Is this a tactical problem, a lack of motivation on the road, or something else? Yakamakis was asked about this on Thursday and he didn't have an answer. And if a player doesn't have the answer, I'm sure as heck not going to have an answer. But I think it's the other team's at home. The other team's trying to win too. You're facing the champion. You're facing a team that really did not have to add any major pieces. This was mostly the same starting 11 that you saw in the playoffs. These guys know what they're doing and they know how to do it well. So you could prepare as much as you want to, but you can't recreate it in practice. All you can do is go out there and try to do what you've been coached to do, what you've been managed to do. Use your fundamentals, use your brains, communicate, but it's hard to do it in a one-off, as you saw today. But Atlanta did, you know, to credit to Pineda and the players, they did get it kind of figured out. They got the fullbacks positioned better to stop those switches of play. They got the fullbacks and the wingers more involved getting forward with the offense. Derek Williams showed his experience. You heard in his audio talking about, well, I'm not going to step into those spaces that I could get in trouble in anymore, and I'm just going to make the guy play through me. So they did figure it out. Now, is that a recipe for long-term success against Columbus? Is it a blueprint to stay with Columbus? Who knows? But you're going to see teams trying things this year, and I'm curious to see what happens. Adam, with a six-parter for the question of the week. I'm almost wondering if we should switch that out with the Andy Griffith whistling tune. Because as I said on the past podcast, I am watching so much Andy Griffith, it drives me crazy. Or it doesn't drive me crazy. I love it. It drives other people who are dear to me crazy. Adam says, I'm interested in your thoughts about the following. Why does it feel like our attack doesn't understand movement off the ball to move defenders and open space for runners? We get carved open by that, and most teams would. I'm surprised we haven't tried utilizing that tactic more. Yeah, so today Atlanta got really kept trying to do some vertical runs off the ball, and those are, you know, they're low percentage passes because the ball's got to go a long way. It's got to be fit into a tight window, and if you miss, you're just giving the ball right back to Columbus, and they're going to start trying to carve you up again with 1-2s. It would be interesting to see Atlanta try to get more horizontally wide to open up more spaces and then allow other people to get vertical, teammates to get vertical. And I know Pineda wants more of that. The team's got to move the ball faster. And for some reason, they get kind of, like in the first half, they were trying to do too much too soon when they got the ball. And they kept giving it up. And Columbus kept getting it back. And then it was coming right back at them again. The second half, they found a better pace, more ideas. But sometimes they do sit on the ball too much. They step on the ball, lose an opportunity, lose a chance to counter. But, you know, I got to think that's probably true of most teams. Piggybacking off that, Adam says, the way we tried to play against Columbus looked like a team who wanted to attack a defense that was fully set behind the ball. Too many times we stopped a counter so the crew players could get all set in position and behind the ball. We saw this a lot last year, too, and it wasn't working then either. I'd have to go back and watch and see how much of that was true. The first half, Pineda said they were Atlanta United was trying to do too much too fast, and they kept giving up the ball. I'd have to go back and watch the second half. I thought Columbus looked tired in the second half, to be honest with you. What was going on with the penalty decision? By this point in the show, you probably have already answered this. I did. I thought the center ref handled it well. I thought the referee had a good game, to be honest. Replacement ref, because of the lockout, I thought he did well. He said, Adam continues, I see defensively we still are constantly exposed when teams pull our fullbacks out of position up the field. allowing another runner to be played into the space behind and then provide a cutback cross to wide open players at the top of the box. Yes, Columbus should have had a couple of goals in the first half because of that. That's when the midfielders have to track back and the wingers pick up the man, mark the man. The problem is a lot of times this is happening off of turnovers in Atlanta United's half, and opponents are turning and attacking quickly, and it's tough for Atlanta United defenders to get back and get into place. That's when Brad was talking about you got to stop that first pass, or you got to stand in the way of the guy making a run, anything just to stop the momentum of the play. He continues, it also looks like we need to work on our mentality. I understand being frustrated when we barely get a touch on the ball after 20 minutes, but lashing out with harsh tackles and picking up needless yellows is not a good idea. So this is a comment about Yurgos Jakimakis. Interesting, Brad Guzan talked about this. Talked about Atlanta United having to run a lot, making dirty runs, as he called it. He guessed that's why Jakimakis got frustrated, because there was a lot of running, not a lot of having the ball, a lot of getting there, and the ball headed back the opposite direction. It gets frustrating after a while. So I understand the question. Atlanta United's trying to be better. Jakimakis didn't do that again. We'll see what happens. He continues, Bartok had a shocker for a debut. His touch and passing were off, and he turned the ball over too often. I'm going to give him time, but I hope this was not indicative of future performances. I didn't think he had that bad of a game. Let's try to find his stats. He had 58 ball possession phases, 42 passes, completed 92% of his passes, had a cross, only committed one foul. Statistically, he seemed to play pretty good, pretty well. He had Atlanta United's only shot on goal in the first half. I don't know. That's the fun of the sport. Everybody can have a different opinion. So if you want to have some fun, tell me how Atlanta United players compare to the cast of the Andy Griffith Show, and I'll read it on the next podcast. Atlanta United is off next week. We'll probably try to come back and have a podcast maybe Thursday. It's just going to depend on if there's some news. I'm going to a thing U.S. Soccer is holding on Monday at Mercedes-Benz to talk about the She Believes Cup, so I'll have some content for that. I want to remind you to please tell your friends about our show, and please give us a rating and a review on Spotify and Apple. That's what helps us grow the podcast. As always, hug your loved ones, communicate with your loved ones, practice empathy, strive for awareness. Thanks for listening to Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut, are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
I'm Ernie Suggs, race and culture reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
And I'm Ned Ravone, lifestyle columnist. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. I've been living here for 24 years, and I am still amazed at how rich the city's Black culture continues to grow. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
Like historically Black colleges and universities.
Atlanta's thriving art scene.
And the city's growing neighborhoods.
Wherever you live, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what issues are important to you.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
Only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.